Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guests.
Hello and welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, episode 117. I'm Paul Spain.
I'm Paul Brislin.
And I'm Harley Ogier.
Hey guys, welcome along. Thank you for joining the podcast this week.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Now, New Zealand had a bit of a census last week.
We did. We had to have a quick count and make sure that all the sheep are in place and that there are a few humans left still. And I think this is the first time we're going to have a census where the results that come back are probably going to show that we're no longer a Christian society.
What are we now?
Something else entirely. I'm not sure. I was going to say agnostic, but no, I'm not sure that's quite the right word. Atheist, I suppose. But yes, following trends, religion disappearing off, dwindling away, a nation of scientists, that's what we'll be, I think, from here on in. That'll be quite good. And looking at how many of us use the internet to fill in our forms, I think that's probably the way of the future.
Yep. Well, I guess, you know, over time we're becoming more and more diverse is probably the current word, isn't it?
Mm. Well, I actually loved the fact that I could fill in my forms on the internet, though I found it a little odd that I needed to get my paper census forms, which didn't arrive and I had to call for before I could fill it in online.
That was an interesting one. One thing we saw was that two of us couldn't be filling in the form at the same time.
Okay. Really? So you're trying to do the dwelling and the individual at the same time?
No, I was trying to do my individual and my wife was trying to do hers and it said no.
Separate computers, same network?
Yeah. Yeah, and just
one login one login number.
Yeah. So fascinating because you might sort of you might think that everyone would let's all go and do our census now. We're not allowed. So it was that sort of situation.
Especially if you had younger kids who you were saying, well, you know, jump on and do this while we do it.
That's right.
You're not going to expect them to stay up later and do it after you when you're doing yours at 8:30. Their bedtimes.
But it didn't take too long to do and. Yeah, the good thing is they're getting started with doing it online, right? I think we could probably pick all sorts of holes in it, but it's heading in the right direction anyway, which is good for government to be doing things in this sort of manner.
Well, eventually, you would hope they'd do it more frequently. I mean, it's been 7 years since the last one. 5-year gap seems to be a little bit odd, I would say. Maybe every 2 years would be quite good.
Yeah, although I did find some of the information they were asking for quite... intrusive, to be fair, to have all of that in somebody's database for it to know all of these things and not just general. Like normally when you fill in a survey, it's an anonymous survey and so on. As with a census, you know, if they're not secure with their information, you know, it really does go into a lot of detail about each individual.
And that's right. They've got to be very careful about stripping off identifying data straight away. Stats NZ do spend a lot of time and effort on that kind of thing, so you'd hope that that was all well secured. But as we've seen with some of the other bits and pieces lately, it's not often that they get that right. I see that David Shearer has been subscribed to the Mighty River Power share offer several times over now, so clearly they haven't even bothered with a simple double opt-in or anything basic like that for that kind of system. So hopefully Stats is a little bit more clued up.
We will see.
We'll find out. Well, I'll go on Google right now and see if you're all out there.
We won't really see, will we, though, unless something does leak. If it's all good, then we just will never hear about it again.
Yeah. But if it's bad, you don't necessarily know about it either, right?
That's true.
And
I guess
that, you know, that's one of the risks, you know, today or around, you know, data security. You don't necessarily know until you find out. Somebody has, you know, electronically stolen your identity or...
That's right. Yeah, you find out the hard way.
Yes. All right. Well, let's hope that's all good. Now, Orcon, one of our local internet providers, started, well, quite a few years ago by CB Woodhouse.
Yeah, quite a few years ago.
And then obviously acquired.
Bought by Cordia, as it's called these days, which was an interesting move. Cordia is owned by We the People. We own it. So this was having spent many years getting rid of Telecom as a government-owned monopoly. Another division of the government went out and bought an ISP. So they raised a few eyebrows, to put it mildly. But at the time, it made sense for Cordia's business plan, which was to try and offer fixed wireless service using its own infrastructure. And that didn't really work, but they eventually ended up with this asset, this ISP. It's now probably third or fourth, depending on how you measure these things, given that Vodafone's bought Telstra Clear and merged the two together. So, yes, there's been rumour for a little while now that it's been up for sale. And today it's gathered quite a bit of a momentum, and it looks like they've actually been sold.
Yeah, and you know the value we would imagine has probably increased a chunk since when they bought it. So, in theory, the government walks away having made a few years' worth of profit, and the capital value having increased as well.
That's right. So I hear talk that it's worth about sort of 30 to 35 million. Yeah, and as you say, you've made a profit through those years as well. It'll be interesting to see what that means for Cordia, which really is one of those industry players that's been around for a long time and does a little bit of all kinds of things, but these days tends to make a lot of its money from Australia. So it's a bit odd that the government of New Zealand owns basically a tower consortium consulting firm that makes its money consulting in Australia rather than doing anything for the local economy over here. But they've got it, and it's sitting there, and once we switch off the analog TV network, a lot of Cordia New Zealand's work disappears. So it'll be very interesting to see how they reinvent themselves again.
Yeah, well, didn't Cordia sort of had its roots in, was it TVNZ?
Yeah, so TVNZ
was it Broadcast Communications Limited,
right,
is what they used to be called?
Yeah. And they're the guys who were responsible for building all the towers in the middle of nowhere, back in the day, of course, when it was all integrated with TVNZ, that allowed radio and television transmission throughout the country. So when they were spun off as a separate business unit, they discovered that they had this footprint of towers and antennas in places where these days, of course, you can't get permission to build. So they had a tremendous footprint as far as network coverage goes. And they decided, well, we'll spend a little bit of money and roll out a layer of data capability underneath it all and sell this fixed wireless asset to rural folk predominantly. But it's never really taken off. And I'm not sure if it was the technology that let them down or their retail partners or quite what the problem was. But these days, they it's still there, but they haven't done anything with it for years.
But they're certainly still pretty important to the broadcasters. You know, radio stations and so on are relying on their towers and so on around the place.
Absolutely. But as all of that goes online, and once we've switched off the analog TV signal, a large chunk of their work will be done. You do have to wonder just where to from here.
Hmm. All right. Well, now what do we know? What do we know about the who's being mooted as the buyer,
the new owner? Well, nobody's confirming anything, but there's a company called Vivid Networks which has popped up on the company's office. They have set up a subsidiary called Orcon Limited, which would tend to be a bit of a giveaway. And although they're saying very little at this stage, it's not clear yet whether it's the Vivid company itself or one of the Vivid directors who's doing all of this. So I guess news will come out in the next few days. But Vivid itself is quite an interesting company. They started life as telepediatrics many years ago with a very niche line of work. They would provide families of children with terminal illnesses with a video conference suite so that the kids could be diagnosed and monitored remotely by not only their GP but also a specialist in Starship in Auckland.
Right. So rather than having to, you know, race them off to
exactly
a
right.
doctor.
Yeah, every time they spike a fever
or
aren't feeling too well. They made quite a name for themselves. They won a couple of awards back in the day. Computer World gave them an award. I was on the panel for that one. I remember them coming in to present. And I think at the time, from memory, we really were impressed by the use of technology just to make life easier for people, you know, for the families, for the kids themselves. In fact, the one who was most impacted would be the poor chap who had to go out to these families and install the gear for them and get to know the families. And then, of course, when you go back to get the gear at the end of the project, it's a very sad time. But they've grown from there, and they don't just do video conferencing in that respect anymore. They do secure VPN and a lot of additional services. So it's quite interesting that they try and get into the retail ISP market. So if they are getting in, it'll hopefully stir things up quite a bit.
All right. Well, we'll probably get a bit more of a picture on that over the next few days. Now, Harley, this was one that something. This next topic is something that you've been looking at with PC World, which is Intel's next unit of computing, NUC.
Indeed.
Tell us what you think of this and where it sort of fits into the world of computing.
Well, I'm not sure when they actually announced it, but I believe it was around the time of their developer forum last year in September, which was the first time I heard of it over in San Francisco. And the first thing I thought was next unit of computing is about as ambitious a name as you could give any device ever. And I would have thought that by now that would refer to the smartphone, but the name wasn't taken, so they went with it. Considering no one's ever going to say that out loud, they've just taken to calling it the Intel Nook, though. Not to be confused with the NOOK, a completely different and unrelated product.
Now, this is it's a very small PC, and the only other thing we can sort of compare it with really in size maybe is sort of the Raspberry Pi, device, but they're very, very, different in terms of, various aspects of the technology, right?
It is. Well, I mean, it's essentially an Intel-powered alternative to Raspberry Pi, except it doesn't have that education focus, so, I mean, the price is standard computer high. It's not your really entry-level hackable hardware.
So the Raspberry Pi, what are we talking about? Is it under 50 New Zealand dollars? I think it was sort of launched at sort of 30, 35 US dollars for the core piece, but then you get a case and
I know, and under $100 you can get a full setup. So I think it is sort of under 50 for the board itself.
And who you see uses the Raspberry Pi? It's more really a hobbyist type tech enthusiast. Not a lot of people sort of buying these things for day-to-day computing, right?
Well, the only people I know who are buying them in any kind of commercial use is schools in the United States. I'm not sure if they've been picked up here by schools or not. I'm sure some classes are using them unofficially. But yeah, you're right. It's really the hobbyist market. Whereas Intel developed their Nook for embedded applications such as digital signage. It's it's a Core i3-based custom motherboard, which... It's based on the same sort of concept of things like Mini ITX, so just a small motherboard, but a standard computing setup, unlike something like Raspberry Pi, which is not just a straight x86.
So you've really got a standard computer.
It's a standard
just
computer
shrunk down to something that can fit in the palm of your hand.
Exactly.
Effectively. So exactly. If you wanted to attach it to a TV or anything that needs a computer... Yep. But you don't have the space, you don't want that generating too much heat and so on.
Exactly.
It's pretty cool.
The really interesting thing with it, though, is Intel is not in the business of making systems. And as they showed off the Nook at their developer conference, they reiterated that and actually came out and said, we are still not in the business of making systems. We make processors, we make CPUs, we don't make complete systems. Yet they're selling the Nook in a kit set form, which is the Nook itself, an Intel created case, and an external power supply. So you add storage and SSD. You add storage and you add RAM. But they are selling what is essentially a system. And the reason behind this is that their little custom 10 centimeter by 10 centimeter motherboard with a Core i3 processor, the same that you'd find in some laptops or desktops, permanently soldered onto it. That is the core product, but to actually get it into people's hands and to get people using it before these embedded applications are available or before third parties, people like Cooler Master or Thermaltake, make cases for it, they had to deliver some kind of kit set to developers and enthusiasts, and that's what's found its way into the retail market. I mean, you can pick up one of these at Playtech. You're looking at about, with RAM and storage, you're looking at about just under $1,000, $950 or so.
$979 is what they're listing it for on their website. That's with two two HDMI connections for potentially putting the same display out onto two displays. I don't think it gives you two different displays.
You can use two different displays. You can use dual monitors, yep.
And then, you know, some Ethernet connection and Wi-Fi, yep. And a couple of USB ports,
yeah,
one on the back and one on the front.
And when we tested it out, it really does run like a basic laptop or a really entry-level desktop PC. So, I mean, like you were saying, you could slap this on the back of a TV or any screen. Quite recently, actually, we got ours running Windows 8. Playtech actually loaned us the review unit via Intel. We slapped it on the back of a Dell touch-based monitor and had our own custom all-in-one, which is just this monitor and the little Intel Nook on the back. But there's no reason you couldn't do that with a wireless keyboard and mouse on the back of your TV. Or, you know, if you had an old monitor hanging around the house, want an extra PC for the kids' room just so they can surf the web, don't go out and buy a brand new PC. You just slap one of these on the back of a monitor.
Yeah.
You know, it'll play HD video. It won't really run games or anything, unless you're talking about your basic cut-the-rope type stuff, which is that it'll do fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a really intriguing little box. Partially
not going to sell millions of units, is it?
No, not going to sell millions of units. But, I mean, it was never. It looks like it was never really meant to sell units to consumers. It was very much for this embedded application. And now that consumers can actually get their hands on it, it's a really neat little consumer product.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Now, we had a little bit of a launch last week onto the New Zealand Stock Exchange, or the NZAX, which was Snack Media. Now, this one's interesting. We are going to cover it off. There is a sort of a separate podcast coming, which we spent some time with Derek Handley, who was the chairman of the board of Snack Media. But it's just been interesting watching this since the launch onto the stock exchange last week, and I think the shares were originally priced at 6.5 cents, and it's now up to I think 15 cents. It's been up and down a little bit, but here's a little company. I think in the last 6 months they turned over something like 1.2 million. So, you know, on an annualized basis, you know, sort of 2.5 million turnover, and they've got a sort of a market cap or valuation around 10 times that. So it suggests people have quite a bit of confidence in where Snack is heading. But it's good to see more, I guess, tech companies locally that are launching onto the stock exchange.
Well, yeah, that's right. We've had a bit of a dearth of them lately, haven't we? I'm trying to think when the last one was, and you might end up going back to Raycon all those years ago for a pure technology company as such. Zero, of course, is a bit of a darling of the stock market these days, but they're few and far between, aren't they? They really are.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zero recently passed the you know, 1 billion New Zealand dollar sort of market cap. And, you know, we're hearing predictions now that it's, what is it, mid-year that they're thinking it could hit 1.4 billion.
Which is not bad, is it? That's quite astounding. And for a company that is at the dull end of the market, for want of a better term, you know, it's accounting software. And everybody just assumed that MYOB had that sewn up. So to be able to come in and steal market share and remain New Zealand-based has been really quite remarkable.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, it's a very good story.
Great to see this sort of innovation coming out of New Zealand and continuing to win attention on a global basis.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, MYOB, I think, you know, eventually sort of pretty much gave up on the UK market. But, you know, we're seeing Xero do, you know, quite strongly, you know, not only in New Zealand and Australia, but definitely in the UK. You know, starting to get established in the US market, and, and obviously lots of others as well. But those are really the you know, the big ones.
Those are the core markets. Yeah. And the functionality keeps getting improved each iteration. There's a lot more growth left in that yet. I think they've got a few big projects underway. It's tremendous to see them keeping the development hub here in New Zealand as they grow. There's always this urge to move them off to Silicon Valley or somewhere and pay a fortune for developers. But no, New Zealand developers are as good as you get over there, and we just don't get paid as much.
Well, that kind of helps from that perspective.
That's right.
Well, it depends on whose perspective you're looking at, whether that helps.
Which end of the telescope you're looking through.
Well, I think we've got, lower living costs here, right? So, it all adds up pretty well.
That's right.
You know, New Zealand's a pretty good country to be in, so I think there'll be plenty of developers, that are quite happy to be working from New Zealand.
Absolutely.
Now, in gadget land, we're always looking at lots of new gadgets coming through, and Harley, that's a big part of what you do day to day and week to week with PC world and computer world, looking at lots of stuff. Now, we were looking earlier at HP. In fact, this was sort of, I guess, the big product last week. We got quite a bit of feedback on was HP's ElitePad 900. Which was a bit of a surprise. We managed to get some hands-on with that, and I know you've been looking at it from a review perspective as well. You gave it a pretty strong review.
I did. I've been trying to remember off the top of my head what score I gave it, but that issue hasn't been published yet, so let's just call it a trade secret for now.
Okay.
But I was really happy with it. I actually looked at it from a split perspective. I looked at it for PC World from my normal consumer bent, and then I've also been looking at it for Computer World from a sort of business standpoint. And on both sides of the equation, it really shines as a strong product. Especially the huge range of accessories HP have for it. I mean, on its own as a tablet, it's a good Windows 8 tablet. It's one of the much better examples we've seen, such as Samsung's ATIV Smart PC is the only other really shining one we've seen. But that's very much consumer-focused. The ElitePad's a lot more sort of businessy in its design and its functions. But the accessory range is what really makes it quite so great.
Well, we managed to get our hands on very briefly, because apparently there's only a couple of these in the country so far, but the keyboard jacket for it, which we just had a little bit of a look at earlier, and I think that is, one of the things in these tablets that is quite an important part of the picture to turn them into sort of a businessy machine. And that one seems to be quite sturdy and solid. The only downside that jumped out to me on it, for me the main downside was that there was no sort of mouse or track point, type, or touchpad type capability there. So you've got to reach out and touch the screen or plug a mouse in. But I think that's probably workable.
I think that's workable too, especially since the keyboard case does add USB ports, which the tablet doesn't have any on its own, which is one of its few shortcomings. But you've got the USB ports there. You can plug in a mouse, as you say, though. A little touchpad or something does go a long way. I mean, that's something the ATIV Smart PC had with its keyboard. It had a full normal touchpad, so it essentially turned it into a netbook.
And something that the Microsoft Surface does extremely well in terms of the its capability there with the little touchpad on it. Now that launches Friday, the Microsoft Surface RT. So that's the other new product in this space that's coming through, which we have talked about before, so we won't jump too much into that. But for anyone that has been waiting for that to land in New Zealand, actually it's Thursday that it launches, and I think it's $739 for the base tablet, and then you can get various, that's a 32 gig, various other models, and you can get it with a keyboard, or you can pay separately to get a nice coloured keyboard.
And that's not nearly as bad a price as we could have expected with the usual transition to New Zealand pricing.
Yes.
I'm quite surprised it wasn't marked up a couple of $100 more, to be honest.
No, I thought by the time you put an exchange rate in there and GST, it's reasonable.
Rorted it, have they?
No, it wouldn't save you a significant amount to import one yourself. It wouldn't save you.
Well, it cost you more by the time you pay the shipping, right?
Exactly.
In most cases. Now, then there's one other product, which is one we looked at a good few months ago. It's the Lenovo ThinkPad Tablet 2, which has an Atom processor much like the ElitePad. But this one is, it's a really nice sort of thin tablet. Doesn't have the sort of the metal, steel look of the Elite Pad. It's very ThinkPad-like in terms of its, you know, blackness.
It looks very much like Sony's latest Xperia tablet, to be honest.
Yeah, there's some similarities, yeah, aren't there?
Though this one isn't waterproof as far as I understand, is it? I mean, can we test that?
I'm not going to try that right now, no.
And it's got a stylus.
And it's got a, yeah, it's got a stylus in there, which we're starting to see a lot of these Windows 8 tablets having a stylus, but often to keep the size of them down, you can't, you know, slot the stylus into the product. But with the tablet too, you can, which I kind of like from a not losing it perspective, but it does make the device a little bigger.
It doesn't make it, I was actually surprised that it doesn't make it that much bigger, because they've gone with a very thin stylus.
Mm. Yeah, it's not as big as and chunky as some of the other ones, and it's quite light.
Yeah, it doesn't weigh very much at all.
Which I think is a fair compromise. Now, but the bit that was, I guess, disappointing for me was the keyboard, which I guess reminiscent in some ways of some of these add-on keyboards for the iPad. And to me, where all of the other vendors are having ones that kind of, you know, physically connect from the keyboard into the tablet, so you don't have to charge it, and so you don't have to think about a Bluetooth connection, which takes up a little bit of battery and so on as well. Most of those have got that direct connection, but this one does operate over Bluetooth, and it doesn't really sort of click in. It just sort of sits on the keyboard. It's not really a proper dock in, is it?
No, it's got none of that positive click that you get. No, it's connected.
Yeah, same sort of sitting in place as Logitech's ultra thin keyboard case for iPad, which is the whole product name. It's got the problem that if it's sitting on your knees and it tips backwards too far, it will just fall over, and the tablet will fall out of the keyboard.
Yeah, land on the floor. But it does have an ability to control the mouse pointer on your screen with a little variation on the Lenovo track point, which is helpful without taking up the full space of a trackpad.
Mm. It definitely gives you more precision than using your finger on the screen for selecting text and things.
Pudgy finger. But the thing that gets me is that it's not a cover. It is a separate keyboard, so it's a separate unit. And as we've tried here, trying to make the two together, they don't.
We've got a nice little folio pouch for carrying the two together. But you know, you kind of need that if you're going to carry them together and you want it nice and tidy. So for me, what I'm really looking for from Lenovo is the Helix, which we're told is just maybe, you know, a short number of weeks away from arriving in the country. And that is really a pretty unique device in terms of, delivering good high power in terms of a i5 or i7, a high-end CPU, and a really nice dock into the keyboard type capability that gives you sort of that, well, what appears to be sort of the perfect mix of a tablet that becomes an ultrabook that can become a tablet again, sort of thing. So, we only had a little bit of a look at that in January during CES, and we hope to have full hands-on with that hopefully in the weeks ahead, and we'll report back. But for now, the HP ElitePad 900 is probably the hot Windows 8, device that can run Windows 8 Pro for business use and so on.
I'd agree with that. I'd say if you're going out buying Windows 8 tablets for business right now, that's really the only option you've got in New Zealand if you want something that's designed for business.
Yeah.
And the I guess the other option is that's always there when buying technology is to sit and wait for the next round of devices. And, of course, we've got June where Intel will bring out their next sort of series of chips, which will give us a bit more power and a bit more battery life and a little bit, smaller, etc.
Never wait. Buy it now and then trade me it up.
Exactly. Good call.
That's what it's for. You can wait forever otherwise.
All right. So now the big news for Friday.
What on earth is happening Friday? No, there's not much going on. That would be the big Samsung mysterious. Is it a Samsung Galaxy S4? Yes. Well, yes, it is. Okay. I think we've asserted that.
Is this a big deal? How much of a big deal is it that Samsung is launching a new version of the Galaxy?
Well, the Galaxy S3 has been its flagship
It's huge, isn't
and,
it?
And has, you know, I was in Hong Kong, name dropping away, in Hong Kong and Kuala Lumpur last month, and we counted on the trains and on the public transport. Everybody had a smartphone, literally everybody. Probably it was 5-to-1 Galaxy S3s to iPhones.
I noticed a similar
huge
thing.
Huge amount.
Traveling in January, seeing, you know, I remember being in an airport lounge and looking around at probably, I don't know, in one, you know, one group, you know, that was reasonably close to me. Probably they're not all, the people weren't all together, but, you know, 6 or 8 people. Yeah. And it looked like most of them had a Galaxy S3.
That's right. That's right. It's been phenomenally successful.
Huge change from the past when you'd look around in an airport lounge and it was all iPhones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, can we say that the Galaxy S3 is the only other phone that's really known by name and holds that kind of status apart from the iPhone? I mean, you got the iPhone, you got the Galaxy, and there's everything else.
And then everything else is an Android smartphone.
Exactly, exactly. And I mean, hey, there are at least 2 of us in New Zealand with Windows phones, don't forget.
Well, both of you, I'm very pleased to see you both. You'll be able to bump them together and share things, I'm sure, or something like that.
Actually, no. The other one I know works for Microsoft, I should point out. But,
They're required by law to have them, so that is a bit of a problem.
Well, but the interesting thing about Windows Phone is it is, you know, it is slowly, you know, it's got that sort of upturn in market share, and Nokia are apparently back in profit. Whereas it looked for a little while there that Nokia up. Sort of going to fall over.
That's right.
So there is, I guess, there's growing competition for Samsung, and you know, when we look at these recent announcements in the last few weeks from, you know, Sony with the Xperia Z, a really strong handset, and you know, there's some great features there, and also HTC. So I don't think that the others in the market are sitting back.
But it is
pretty clear that Samsung has been very, very broadly adopted, and I think are considered the phone option of choice for a pretty large percentage of the market now.
And they're going to have to step up because, of course, we've got the Nexus coming out, hopefully, in New Zealand. Whenever they get round to us.
And the Nexus 4 is here?
No,
the Nexus,
It's here already?
The Nexus 4 is here.
Yeah, it's been very quiet. So if we look out the window at 2 degrees...
We can see a giant billboard?
No, we can't see a billboard, but they brought them into the market, which was good to see.
Very good.
Then them doing that. And it's been available, you know, at a reasonable sort of price compared to what we've seen through other carriers internationally.
Well, at the time I tested the Nexus 4, I thought that was probably the best pure Android phone that I'd used, and one of the better Android-powered phones on the market. Though, I mean, whenever you talk about Android-powered phones, you have to include the S3 and soon to be the S4.
Yep. So for Samsung, it's really a case of keeping their edge in the market, isn't it? And staying up there. So the sort of capability they're talking about, I mean, it's all rumor and speculation at this stage, but we're talking about things like increased battery life through the new green PHOLED technology. I'm not entirely sure what that is. It sounds like witchcraft to me.
But it's a screen that runs with a little bit less power,
About 25% less is what we're reading, and that's got to help. But interestingly, it's the hands-free scrolling, the eye tracking,
which watches you look to the bottom of the phone and says, you must be wanting to go down a little bit further, and it just sort of keeps it moving, which is definitely cool stuff.
If it doesn't work extremely well, it will be quite tedious and annoying, I suspect.
Well, Samsung are known for sort of adding one or two uniques to their devices, that's certainly something that has potential. Now, they're going to have to deliver a full high-definition screen, aren't they, like what we've just seen from HTC and from Sony? That's pretty much a given. Would you both agree?
I think if it's not 1080 by 1920, it's just not going to fly, because that's all your high-end phones now. Yeah, the HTC One, the Xperia Z, did that definitely have it did, didn't it?
The question is, do we actually need a screen resolution that high? I mean, that's the same as your 40-inch, 50-inch you know, 60-inch TV.
It is, yes. And that's significant.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Decision
more,
made. Thank
more
you, Paul.
More, bigger, faster. Yes. Okay. All of the above.
So do we need the next resolution? The
4K on a
4K on a finer screen. Well, we're going to get this much. Yeah.
I think at that point, you're literally getting to the point that your eyes, even with 20/20 vision, can't discern
can't
the difference.
Tell the difference. I struggle with 1080. Yeah. You know, I'm a 720 kind of guy.
Well, if you'd asked me even 2 years ago, would anyone release a phone with that sort of resolution?
Yeah.
I would have said, what's the point? What's I don't think anyone will ever do it. Yeah,
Here we are.
And here we are saying it must be in the Galaxy S4, otherwise it's doomed to failure.
Yeah. Well,
it's incredible, isn't it, how fast these things move.
Yeah.
Do we know the actual pixel density dots per inch on that? It's got to be 400 and something. Because I know the iPhone's 326.
Yeah, so we're talking in the 440 to 450 pixels per inch, which if we remember, look back on when laser printers were launched, I'm showing my age here, I was the one kid in school that instead of handing in a handwritten report or something off their dot matrix printer, went and paid to get my things printed on a laser printer and handed them in because they would look better even if the work wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But they were 300 dots per inch.
Yeah,
that was like, wow, that's a phenomenal resolution. And we're seeing way more than that, but in full color on our screens. I mean, you just cannot see that level of detail.
We print our magazines at 300 dots per inch still. And I've never looked at a copy of PC World or one of our other mags and thought, you know, that really needs more pixels. Yeah. That's not nearly sharp enough.
Well, so it is a little bit different with ink to screen.
That's true. But you're talking about something that's, 33% sharper than the current iPhone with its touted Retina tech.
Astonishingly clear.
Yes.
Mm. But, Samsung's really trying to push the edge with all of this kind of technology. And I don't know if you saw the video the other day of the Samsung CEO on stage with what looked like a flexible piece of clear plastic.
When
he turned it over, and he was flexing it as he did. It's about the size of a cell phone. Flexing it away as he did, when he turned it over, it was running full screen video right to the very edge of this thing. I've got no idea what it is or what use I would have for it, but I want one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Immediately. And I'm thinking T-shirts made out of the stuff or perhaps wall-mounted TVs as big as your wall, very cheaply and with glorious, glorious colour to them.
And you could maybe embed it into some sort of a mask so that you could sort of change your look at a moment's notice. Fine resolution and detail that
looks like
actually
cloth.
It would just look as though you were somebody else.
Well, I was thinking embedded everywhere and then just have changeable tattoos.
Oh, exactly.
I feel like a Mass Effect theme today. Let's go Mass Effect. I'll just download the skin.
Oh, that is freaky, but Sky-fi becomes reality.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, now, so waterproof, that's something that the Sony Xperia Z has. Do we think that's going to be a feature from Samsung, or is that going to be one of the uniques that Sony sort of will keep in this generation of products? What are your thoughts?
I think Sony's going to keep it as a unique in their mainstream high end. I mean, Samsung might come and totally shock and say, "Oh yeah, our phone's waterproof to 1,000 meters." I mean, Sony's the standard IPX7, which gives you 30 minutes at 1 meter depth.
Mm.
So you can drop it and you can drop it in a bucket or you can drop it in the ocean and grab it out.
Yeah.
But it's not waterproof as in you wouldn't go diving with it.
Well, and they call it water resistant.
Water resistant. Right? They do.
Fair enough too.
But I think it's something that we've had around for quite a while. It's not brand new. There have been lots of rugged phones that had this feature, but theirs is the first that, I mean, Motorola Defy, for instance, was relatively water resistant. But Sony's the first to actually come out, put on a really high-end smartphone, and a phone that's not about being rugged or waterproof. In fact, it looks quite fragile. I'm not sure how much punishment it can take. Unfortunately, I don't think they'd be happy if we tried to find out with a hammer.
Stress test it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, there's the first time that someone's really put this feature on a phone that's not about that feature.
Yeah.
And I think they might retain their uniqueness in this product cycle, but... I hope that's something that we see more and more of in the mainstream. Because how often do you drop your phone in water?
Oh, water damage is the single biggest claim against any phone from an insurance company.
Exactly, and that's why they put those little water detecting strips that's inside, right. so they can say we won't pay your warranty because you dropped this in the toilet.
It's got water damage. Exactly. I think we'll be struggling to see it in the S4. It looks like, from what I've read on all the rumor sites, they'll retain the plastic shell. And unless you want to really go high in plastics and seal it in somehow, I think you're struggling there to waterproof it.
And they're also talking about a 13 megapixel camera.
Yeah, there's talk of that. I don't know whether that's serious or not, but you know, that's the sort of level we're getting up to. But again, megapixels is one of those magic numbers which doesn't mean the same thing to all people.
Well,
so.
I mean, in plain sciencey terms, at a certain point and behind a certain lens, if you start packing in more megapixels, you'll get worse results, particularly in low light. And that's not something that you can technology away past a certain point.
Hence why HTC have just launched the HTC One with a 4-megapixel camera. They've gone in the opposite direction.
Yeah. I had a brief hands-on with that in Sydney, and full disclosure, they paid for me to go to Sydney for the launch. But I had a brief hands-on with that, and I tried to take a couple of shots, and they had sort of a nightclub-y setup with coloured lights, and it was quite dark, and a band was playing. I've never heard of them. And I took some photos in that environment, thinking, well, this is the perfect test. And they really did come out like their demo shots up on show, and taking the same sort of shots with my HTC 7 Trophy, granted that's quite a dated phone, but you know, the quality in terms of contrast and brightness, it was big, astounding.
Big difference.
And they've done that by putting in less pixels. Less pixels, same size sensor means bigger pixels. Bigger pixels take more light. So when someone says they've got a 13 megapixel camera on a phone, it kind of just leaves me groaning and saying, I hope that's not the case. Could you at least stick to 6 or 8?
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, we had this debate around screens just a minute ago, but yeah, I think 8 at the moment with the realms of technology is probably a good upper point, but if they do something magical and they do some crazy cool thing with the lens and the sensor and so on,
and unless they're expanding the sensor in the back, you know, that's the point.
Then great, but you know, and there will be change that will probably one day bring us 20 megapixel in a camera that's absolutely phenomenal and can take use of it. But, you know, I don't think those days are here just yet. So.
Unless they've got something big up their sleeve for the next thing that's not eye scrolling, then not really expecting too much there.
I think the best thing they could do would be get rid of Keys. Is it called Keys? Kais? However you say it? The evil software that Samsung adds in, which seems to get in the way of file transfers rather than enabling them. Just stop it. It's awful. Get rid of it.
All right. Just stop putting things in front of Android.
Just leave it alone. Yeah. Stop customizing it. Just leave it raw.
iOS won't let you. Windows Phone won't. Well, not that iOS will let you put it on anything that's not Apple, but
That's right.
Windows Phone won't let you. So,
yeah, there's something to be said for that degree of dictatorship.
Now, that's probably us on the Galaxy S4. Next week, we'll be able to have the real word on it. So we will come back with all of that news very, very soon. Other gadgets and whatnot that we've been playing with. The main one for me over the last week was a security cam from D-Link. Now, I don't know if you've played with this one, Harley.
Yep, I looked up the model. I have given that one a try.
Yep. The DCS-932L. I don't know why they have such weird, obscure naming. I guess it's because these companies just release lots and lots of products over time.
I think they should go with sort of car naming standards, though. I want to start buying laptops named the Osimo or, you know,
the GLX 3.2.
Exactly, exactly. But okay.
So the DCS 932L. What were your thoughts on it from looking at it?
I think it's an awesome way to remotely watch your cat when you're out of the house.
Well, that was what I was doing, except it was my son. I was in the house, but I was just playing with the night vision capability and so on. And it's got, this probably doesn't work at a big range, but it's got, the little infrared, lighting.
It does work at a surprising range.
It works completely in the pitch black, and you can see what's going on, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's great for things like driveways if you've got security problems. I mean, it's great for things like offices as well, where you turn the lights off at night. And then you want to still be able to get your surveillance footage without having to leave all the lights on and spending, you know, more on power than you'd make up for by preventing theft.
Yeah, well, I didn't look at all the features. You probably went a little bit more in depth than me, but I found, you know, the app for it on iOS. I tried it on iOS and Android. I couldn't find a Windows Phone app for it. There may well be one because there are third-party apps for some of these platforms.
Couldn't find anything for Windows Phone, but if you go to the web interface, you can still get you can see the image still, but you can't get audio or anything through that way.
Right, right. So, that all worked quite nicely. It's nice just to be able to fire that up.
Yeah.
And it's got and these may be features you played with in terms of FTP upload and other bits and pieces. Did you play around with any of those
I did play with the FTP upload in particular, actually. That's the one of the advanced features I did try, which was quite nifty. I had it running as a little, you know, old-fashioned website webcam just by FTPing up a new picture every minute to my own website, and you can do quite nifty things like that if you want to have a from the office type viewpoint or something. You can set it up like
from
that.
From the cat.
So we could have one sitting in here while we're doing the podcast, so people can just see us sitting here doing the podcast. It'd be pretty boring, wouldn't it?
I'd have to wear my trousers. Yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
A good face for radio.
So. Anyway, quite a cool camera, and what I was alluded to is the price of that's just come down recently. It's around $150. So camera with those sort of capabilities, it's a reasonable brand name, good sort of local support here in New Zealand, and warranty and so on. I think it's a pretty good bang for buck.
I think that's a good deal. And I mean, just you're talking about a camera that you plug into your home network. You can remotely access it from at home or over the internet. And so you got your whole security solution in one.
It's not bad going.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, especially if you're in a couple.
Yeah, we will probably look a little bit more at some of that security stuff over the next little while. But, that was one that sort of stood out and good of D-Link to fire that over in our direction. As with all the other people that fire nice stuff over in our direction, always appreciated.
Well done.
Now, just before we finish up, one app of interest that we were discussing before we started was LibriVox, LibriVox .org is their URL. But Paul, you've been playing around with this audiobook application.
Well, that's right, on my Android. And the reason is that I go to the gym, and gyms are really boring, and I don't like listening to the teeny bop music, so. And they never seem to have anything on TV other than last month's league games for some reason. So I plug in my ears, I listen to audiobook, and plug away on the treadmill or on the cross trainer. And it's fantastic. I use LibriVox for the out of copyright stuff. And you
which
get
is basically free, right?
It's all free. You know, you pay for the download traffic, of course, but the you don't pay for the content at all. Most of the readings are done by amateurs, so if you get the urge to have a crack yourself, they're more than welcome to do just that. And so long as it's a an out of print or an out of copyright book, you're off and running. And
that's really
and
cool.
I've you know, there's Kipling in there. There's kids' books, E. Nesbitt, the Railway Children, all this kind of stuff, as well as Shakespeare, of course. There's heaps of Shakespeare in there, and Sherlock Holmes. And I've just been merrily downloading away and listening at the gym.
Yep.
So getting a little bit of culture while fighting the flab. It's been quite good. Mm. If not LibriVox, then the other one I use, of course, is Audible, which is the big beast in the room. It's owned by Amazon, and that really does get you the latest and greatest books. So
yeah,
that's
very cool, but it is reasonably expensive to get the books.
Always
but,
buy them on sale. $5 for a book. That's your lot.
Good. Yeah. Good. Excellent tip, actually. Well, that really brings us to a close this week. So, hey, thank you both for joining us. Now, Paul Brislin, CEO of Two Anns.
Two Anns, that's us. Not Tua NZ. We've got nothing to do with David.
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Shameful.
I think
telecommunications something or other, apparently.
Yeah, something about telcos.
So where do we find you online? You're on Twitter, of course.
Twitter, almost habitually, at Paul Brislin. Failing that, the website is twoanns.org.nz.
TUANZ.
That's us, and I blog about telco related matters and generally try and help people out when they have problems with their phone companies.
Well, much appreciation from all of those who use the internet and every other telco related thing in New Zealand.
Most welcome.
Yeah, cheer, bro.
And Harley, where do we find you?
Well, the best place to find me is pcworld.co.nz, which is where you'll find my actual work stuff. If you insist, you can come and find me on Twitter at Harley Ogier. That's O-G-I-E-R. And there I mostly tweet about My Little Pony and my cat. You might find some technology in there, or you might not.
I notice some technology-related stuff from time to time.
When something interesting's happening.
Yep. All right, good. Well, and you can find me, Twitter is at Paul Spain, and techjungle.com is my Geek Zone blog. And that wraps us up. Please feel free to look up NZ Tech Podcast online at nztechpodcast.com, and feel free to also rate us on iTunes if you like listening to the show, or you don't. Then give us a little rating there on iTunes if you're an iTunes user. Of course, people listen in through all sorts of mechanisms, so that only accounts for a portion of the listenership. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus. In fact, we just started last week a little group on Google Plus, NZ Tech. So just for a little bit of chit chat, since they've started up their new community feature, it's just a little bit of we're just trialing it really to see how it all works. But feel free to come and chit chat with us on there. So that's us. Thanks, everyone. See ya.